Theater Talk is presented by 42 North Brewing Company's Theater District Tap Room.
For Theater Talk on BTPM NPR, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And I went to, and you think I'm going to say New York City, don't you?
I do.
I went to Maryland.
Wait a minute. The Great White Way, Maryland.
Well, Maryland, which also surrounds Washington, D.C. So I got down to the arena stage to see the newly revised version of Damn Yankees with a revised book by Doug Wright and additional lyrics by Lynn Ahrens. And it is marvelous.
And the revisions all made sense to you?
Well, yeah, they've set it in 2000. It's a very 1950s musical. Just briefly, Damn Yankees is the story of a diehard fan of the Washington Senators who makes a pact with the devil. He says, I'd sell my soul to see the Senators win the pennant. And by 2000, the Washington Senators are defunct, so he's rooting for the Baltimore Orioles, which scans with the music. And the devil, in the person of Mr. Applegate, originally Ray Walston, remember my favorite Martian,
right,
comes and fulfills this dream. He makes him Joe Hardy, the greatest baseball player of all time. And to keep him in line, he deploys Lola, a seductive witch-type character who was originally played by Gwen Verdon, remarkable Broadway dancer, here played by Anna Villafañe, Mr. Applegate played by Rob McClure.
Oh.
And Joe, who starts old and becomes young, is played by that heartthrob African-American actor from the Gilded Age, Jordan Donica.
But I gather that casting African-Americans in that role wasn't just to be DEI. It actually is part of the plot.
Yes. To motivate this, they make Joe the son of a former Negro League baseball player. So he also has this bit of drive and this desire to triumph for his father and all this kind of thing. And Meg, the wife, is given far much more substance in this as well, whereas she was just a long-suffering 1950s housewife. In this, she's a teacher, she has a profession of her own, and when Joe comes back, the big test is, it's no longer that they tricks the devil into restoring him. Lola tells him, if there is true love that's more powerful than the hold he has on you. So having abandoned his wife for 6 months, he has to go back, and there's this moment where he says, do you still love me? I know what I've done, and I'll tell you everything, but first I need to know, do you still love me? And then the entire resolution of the plot is up to Meg. If she says no, he goes down under.
Now, I have to admit, I never really cared for the song Who's Got the Pain, but the advantage was you get the Bob Fosse, Gwen Verdon dancing. So what did they do with that?
Well, it suffers from the lack of that dancing. That number alone was the absolute height, the pinnacle of Gwen Verdon and Bob Fosse working together. And in the 1950s, you simply had to have a Latin number. Virtually every 1950s musical has a Latin number. Pajama Game has Hernando's Hideaway. Wonderful Town has the conga number. Even My Fair Lady has a tango. So it made sense. They still have it as a kind of a tribute to Joe Hardy, and Lola comes and does the number. She is not the dancer that Gwen Verdon was.
Who is? Illy.
No one is.
So you originally went down for a family visit, and then it turned out to be much more.
Well, I also went to children's theater, of course, down there where I am Uncle Tony. I saw at Magic Theater, I think it's in Bethesda.
You know, that's where I was born.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I can't believe no one mentioned it.
I'm sure it's on my Wikipedia page, if I had one.
I would have dropped your name when I went to see The Very Hungry Caterpillar. 75 gorgeous puppets with visible puppeteers and
wow,
and lots of running up and down the aisles and kids going berserk and bubbles falling from the ceiling. A delightful experience for preschoolers who were very, very invested.
Isn't that the best part of going to the theater of youth here in Buffalo? That total concentration, that total belief. They buy in immediately, and the screams, the delights.
Well, that night, my five-year-old niece organized a one-person recreation of The Very Hungry Caterpillar, in which she acted out the whole thing, including the metamorphosis into a butterfly, with nothing but the imagination. Though I must say the box office was quite elaborate. It was a ticketed event. We had to line up. We were all given a paper fiver, and we paid and went in, and she had a full house. The whole day, she had thought through the box office far more than she had thought through the performance. And I thought, if more theaters did that, their audiences would be as full as hers was. Her priority was on the ticketing and the audience and the show she just made up as she went along.
But, well, I know you've often complained about the small size of many lobbies. It's so hard to hang out at an intermission.
It is.
Here,
it
I guess you had the whole house.
And excellent food. Crab cakes down there in Maryland. For Theater Talk on BTPM NPR,
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.